Ladies and gentlemen, do I have a treat for you? You did such a great job this past year that I've arranged for you and your spouses, or significant others as the case may be, to take a 4-day group cruise on me. It leaves October 11th, going to Cancun, Cozumel, and the Grand Caymans. Now, there'll be lots of great food, nightlife, shopping, sightseeing, you name it. I've even planned a couple of seminars by top motivational speakers on the ship itself, as well as a magician to entertain you and a dance instructor to sharpen your footwork on those romantic cheek-to-cheek numbers.
Actually, Don, that sounds like the week that Kevin's team will be vying for the regional championship.
My father's very ill, so I'm not going to make any plans that'll put me anywhere that I can't be with him in a matter of hours.
I'm not sure that my wife will want to go on a group vacation.
It sounds great, but I'm so sensitive to the sun, I'd have to stay below deck the whole time.
Did a cruise like that with my first husband.
Take care of the cats.
Get horribly seasick.
Just give us bonuses.
Don's a strong director who owns a telemarketing company. He decided to reward his sales crew with an all-expense-paid cruise to the Caribbean. He was proud that his firm had done so well recently, and he was pleased with himself for being a thoughtful boss who'd come up with such a generous bonus. So he announced the junket with great fanfare in a staff meeting, and you heard the less-than-enthusiastic responses. Don expected a thunderous ovation, but there was none. Our man Don was stunned. What happened? Who are these ingrates? He wondered. After the meeting, he took aside one of the salespeople he knew best and asked,
Laurel, what gives? I knock myself out for you people. Spend a lot of money I don't have to spend arranging a free vacation in one of the most glamorous spots of the world. And you all look at me like I'm Typhoid Mary. How come? I'm totally baffled.
Don, everybody appreciates the gesture. Really, we do. But it would have been better to check with everybody first to see if they were free on those dates, if they wanted to travel as a group, and if a cruise is their idea of a good time. And if it is, what kinds of activities they would enjoy on the ship. Personally, I think magic acts are pretty stupid. And I know Fred would rather have his throat cut than get out on a dance floor. Don, we really do appreciate you. You're a great boss. But we're not all like you. You're a few years older than most of us, and your kids are grown, so your free time is pretty much your own. Not so with many of us. Besides, you're a bit of a party animal and enjoy drinking and dancing and staying up late. Fine, but not everybody else does.
So I screwed up by trying to be so nice, huh?
No. Trying to be kind to your employees is great, but you've got to remember they're not all cast from the same mold. Paying for the trip is a wonderful gesture, but paying attention to how we differ as individuals is probably more important in the long run.
Okay, I see what you mean. But how come nobody ever told me this before?
We did, Don. We really did. Remember when you decided Fridays in the office would be hippie day and everybody would wear tie-dyed t-shirts, jeans, and Birkenstocks like you did in the 60s? And only a few people came to work that way? Remember when you had the soda vending machines in the lounge replaced by mineral water and nearly had a riot on your hands? Remember the time when you actually...
If Don had already been practicing the Platinum Rule, he would have known better. Instead of telling his employees where they were going, how they would get there, and how they would have fun, he could have been listening. If he'd worked with them to find the best plan, he would have gotten more of a morale payoff for his money, and his sales team would have felt as if they were being treated like adults. The Platinum Rule provides that extra ingredient that leaders can use in endless ways for their employees and for themselves. Being adaptable can help you build bridges to your employees and make them feel valued. By learning how to respond to their interests and concerns, their strengths and weaknesses, you can get the most from your people as well as leave them more satisfied. In this segment, we're going to look at 4 typical managerial situations: motivating, complimenting, counseling, and delegating. By now, you're pretty familiar with the characteristics of the 4 behavioral styles, so you'll understand as you hear each manager adapt his or her own style according to the style of the person being addressed. Let's begin with motivating. Here's the basic situation. Mike is the manager of a highly competitive retail operation. He's got to tell his subordinates that prices are being raised 10% next month. These commissioned salespeople live or die on volume. They're not going to be thrilled at the prospect of a price hike, which the competition may not meet. But it's a decision that's already been made several levels above Mike's head. His job is to carry it out, not debate it. Mike has salespeople representing each of the four basic personal styles. How can he tailor his approach to each? Let's begin with how to address the socializers.
Guys, I know this price hike is going to make it a little tougher to move the product, but it is going to make stars of those of you who can do it. Look, you're among the best people we've got. I get great feedback from your accounts every day. So I have no doubt but you're going to make lemonade from these lemons. Think of this as an opportunity, not a setback. Seize the challenge. Turn it to your advantage. Don't see things the way others see them, but make others see things the way you see them. You know how people are. A product as good as we offer it should cost a little more than cheap imitation, so let people know that. Hey, we're still under what we should be getting for the kind of quality, service, name, and great bunch of people that we offer. A simple price increase doesn't change the basic situation. You are a dynamic sales team. And, like always, let's face it, people are going to buy product no matter what. It's just a question of who they buy from. So who are they going to buy from? You! That's who.
That was Mike adapting his style in order to address the socializers. Now, same situation, but he's facing a group of thinkers. What does he say?
Sales staff, I know this price hike is going to make it a little tougher to move the product, so I wanted to take a minute to explain why it is absolutely imperative. Now, you have basic inflation, plus the rise in production costs as a result of turmoil in our labor markets, and several natural disasters. Plus, of course, all the R&D investment, which is beginning to pay off in innovations. Well, that's got to be covered. Now, I don't like it any more than you do, but this is what we have to deal with. So our best bet is to understand the decision and then, logically, figure out the ramifications as best we can. Now, one thing I'd like to do, and perhaps you can all help generate this, is to create a revised list of key benefits of our largest volume products. I'll arrange to get cost and benefit comparisons with our competitors' products. That way, you'll be armed to explain to your accounts just why this is happening and how, in the long run, they are still coming out ahead with us. Also, you can tell them, and I promise you this, that we won't be having another hike for a long time. And if you have any other questions about this, if you want more facts or stats, you'll be sure to let me know.
Mike certainly changed the emphasis of his message when he changed the group he was addressing. Can he do it again? Can he deliver the same message about the price increase, this time to a group of relator salespeople? Let's listen.
My friends, I know this price hike is going to make it a little tougher to move the product, but I don't want you to worry or panic. Unfortunately, there are economic necessities that we have to deal with, but it's not going to affect the way we work as individuals or as a team. Price is only a small part of the product profile. Much more important is what this company stands for and what you all are known for. Trust and reliability. And that's something that's not going to change. Now, the company's being upfront about this price increase. It's not trying to disguise it through service charges or other window dressing. All that is changing is the price. The company, our reputation, our management structure, our spirit are all staying the same. Now, the price hike isn't a sign of changes to come. It's just simple numbers. You've all been very steady producers, and I think you'll be able to reassure your accounts that this is necessary and manageable, that what they're still paying for is our quality and personalized attention. Now, I'll talk to each of you from time to time as the new prices take effect to find out if they're having an impact on your sales and commissions, and if there is any negative effect, we'll work together to come up with solutions. But I sincerely doubt you'll see any decreases. Knowing you, it's more likely that your accounts will continue to grow.
Same bottom line message delivered to a group of relators. Do you think Mike was effective? I do. But wait, what about the directors? Can he come up with yet a fourth way to deliver the same message? Let's see.
Troops, I know this price hike is going to make it a little tougher to move the product. That's a fact, plain and simple. Now, people don't want to pay higher prices for the same product. And we have no choice in the matter. Fluctuations in foreign labor markets, R&D expansion, various reasons are behind this, but that doesn't really affect us. Now, I'll get you info on paper in case anyone needs to know the exact background. But for us, the question is, what can we do? Now, I say downplay the price increase without hiding it. Push product benefits that you don't usually stress. You're resourceful. I don't have to tell you how to do your job. You'll probably come up with the new competitive approaches of your own. So let me know of anything that'll help the rest of the sales force. I have no worries about you. You're fighters, and a 10% hike is nothing when you're committed. You know our rivals are going to rejoice when we announce this, so let's find some practical ways to have them eating their words by next quarter and jacking up their own prices just to keep up.
You might have thought it impossible to come up with four very different ways of motivating a sales force, but you just heard it done. Knowing what you do about the needs of each style, I'm sure you could hear how Mike selected key words and used a tone appropriate to each group. Let's move on to complimenting. This is a subtle art when it's done well. Here's the situation. Joan is a supervisor, and she's been told by her boss that morale seems to be lagging. The boss's remedy? Joan should make it a point to give more positive reinforcement to the troops. She knows she has employees in each of the four behavioral styles, each with different motivations. Feedback which pleases some may seem irrelevant or even mildly insulting to others. How does Joan match her compliments to her workers? Let's listen as she addresses a thinker.
Gail, I just wanted to let you know you're doing a great job. You are amazingly thorough, precise, and efficient, and that really helps in a business like this, where we have so much information and paper moving back and forth. I mean, look at this desk. I bet you know where everything is. That's important, and I know it helps everyone who has any dealings with you. I admire your conscientiousness and persistence, too. Once you get on a project, you're like a bulldog digging up information and sticking with the task until it's complete. I know when I give you something, it's going to be done right. I just wanted to let you know. All the little things you are doing are not going unnoticed.
Now Joan moves over to the office of a relator. How does she change the content of her compliment to fit this person?
Greg, I just wanted to let you know you're doing a great job. I know it not only from what I see, but from what I hear. A lot of people have commented to me about how easy and pleasant you are to work with. As you know, this is a business where everybody is always in everybody else's face, so communication is so important. If people don't listen to each other, connections get lost and things get done wrong. That's why having someone like you who really listens is such a boon. And I know you set a good example for others. You show them that you can get the job done without rushing, without worrying or panicking. One step at a time, making sure everyone involved is on the same wavelength so that time-consuming misunderstandings don't cause problems. If I had a room full of employees like you, my job would be a piece of cake. I just wanted to let you know, both as your quote-unquote supervisor, but more importantly, as your peer and your friend, that you are really terrific to have working here.
I'm sure that compliment was well received by a relator. But would a director really appreciate all that friendly talk? Probably not. Let's hear what Joan does with a director.
Gary, I just wanted to let you know you're doing a great job. The three projects you organized last quarter were great. Your confidence, your ability to make decisions under pressure, your ability to work with and motivate others shows strong leadership. You identify problems, and then you come up with ways to deal with them, and not everybody can do that. In a fast-moving business like ours, taking action that is strong and unequivocal can make a big difference. And you're very good at communicating to others what's happening with a project, what the problems are, and what needs to be done. You don't wait. You look ahead. You anticipate. Well, I can go on and on, but you get my drift. The point is, you've accomplished a lot here. You get results, and you're the kind of employee for whom good enough isn't. You're always making that extra effort to be a winner and to make this company a winner, too. That's the kind of drive I think is going to be recognized and rewarded by the top brass as time goes by.
Good job. Now let's hear Joan compliment a socializer.
Grace, I just wanted to let you know that you are doing a great job. Actually, job isn't really quite the word, because you bring a lot more to it than just a job. Creativity, charisma, a sense of challenge, and even adventure. Like, every new project is a work of art. I mean, you may have more ideas in a week than I have in a year. And in a constantly evolving and growing business like ours, you have to be able to adapt, to go with the flow, and probably more than anything, to work with all kinds of different people. I've noticed, I don't know if you do this on purpose or not, but you're always making people laugh. And not by telling jokes on the lunch hour kind of thing, but by finding what's interesting or new or ironic or just plain ludicrous about the work we do, and then letting yourself and others enjoy themselves by getting the job done. You remind us in this hectic business gotta get it done right now world that we are all human, and we're all in this together. And a lot of the times, we actually work better and get things done quicker when we're not so absolutely morbid as death about it. Anyway, I love having you around, and I just wish I could justify putting myself on some projects with you so we could work together a little bit more.
Complimenting each person according to their needs and what they value is a perfect example of the Platinum Rule in action. But complimenting is easier than counseling when things aren't going so well. Here's a new situation. Steve has four workers whose performance seems to have slipped. They appear more moody and listless than usual. He thinks they may be troubled by something at work or home. If each of them is a different behavioral style, how can Steve best approach the subject? First, a relator.
Paul, you seem to be troubled about something lately. And I think it might be affecting your work. Would you like to talk about it? Because if there's something bothering you, it's in both our best interests to bring it out in the open and work it out together. You and I have known each other for a long time. We've been through plenty of ups and downs together. I hope you know that, quite apart from our roles as superior and subordinate, I care about you and I'm here for you if there's something you want to discuss. If there is a problem, you know I'll work with you on it, regardless of what it is. If you don't feel comfortable talking about it right here or right now, we could do it later, perhaps in my office, or we could take lunch together tomorrow or go for a walk after, whatever you like. Just remember that when something's troubling you, I'm concerned, and I want to help you get back to being your regular self.
Now Steve has to counsel a director. What changes in language, tone, and focus does he make in order to adapt to this style?
Penny, you seem to be troubled about something lately, and I think it might be affecting your work. You seem less focused. You've been making some simple errors, and you've been slower processing the dailies. That's not like you. So what's up? If you need to talk to someone, we can arrange that. But we've got to get you back up to full speed. You tell me. What do you think's the best way to tackle this? I know you want to maximize your performance. You're that kind of person. You're a doer, not just a talker. And we both want you to whip this thing. So how do you suggest we go about it? Tell me what I can do to help, and I'll do it.
In yet another counseling session, Steve addresses a socializer. What's different from the way he addressed the director?
Pamela, you seem to be troubled about something lately, and I think it might be affecting your work. In fact, it's affecting the whole atmosphere around here. Usually it's bright sunshine in this office, but lately it's been all clouds. Is there something behind it all? You're such a happy, on-top-of-the-world kind of person. You know, your attitude's one of your real strengths. But lately you haven't seemed quite yourself to me. What it is you haven't been having any fun. So whatever it is, major crisis or just something ticked you off, or you might as well get it off your chest. Get it out in the open, and then we can bat it around a little, and you'll be back to normal in no time. You can confide in me, you know. Being able to talk to each other about what's eating us, that's what makes us a team around here, isn't it? So tell me, what's it all about?
There was certainly a difference in the way Steve addressed this person, who's a socializer, from the way he spoke to the director before her. With the socializer, he did not approach the problem head-on, the way he did with the director. Instead, he emphasized the socializer's feelings and tried to lighten the atmosphere. So, how will he do with a thinker who's probably the person least able to handle any criticism? Let's listen.
Patrick, you seem to be troubled about something lately, and I think it might be affecting your work. I sense it may be something personal, or perhaps some aspect of your job that's not working for you, or a fellow employee that's getting on your nerves. If you tell me about anything that might be bothering you, I'll try to help. I'll examine the situation with you and see if there's anything I can do at my end to change the circumstances or solve the problem. If it's something personal or something more complicated, we can deal with it in a larger way. If you think it'd be productive, for example, we could meet to review things, just you and I, for, say, an hour or so each week. If that doesn't work for you, I could set up a meeting with employee assistants or, if you like, an outside counselor. My point is, you don't have to grapple with this by yourself. There are a number of different options if you'd like to explore them. None of them are set in stone. They're all at your discretion. You can bail out if they're not working for you, and then we'll figure out a different approach.
Here again, we've heard the same person deliver a difficult message four different ways. This is obviously a skill, one that you can learn and get good at, too. Now let's consider one more way in which you can use the Platinum Rule to your advantage in demonstrating your leadership abilities. This is a tough one for many people. It's the art of delegating. Delegating is hard to do at all for some people, but think of the added challenge of adapting your style to the person you're delegating to. This is definitely advanced Platinum Rule technique. Here's the situation. Bill is a manager in a large corporation. A reorganization has placed two departments under him, and his workload has soared. He's putting in incredibly long hours and still not getting everything done. At this rate, he'll end up in intensive care. He's got to unload some of his tasks to his employees. Yet, there are no extra titles or money to pass out along with the extra duties. How can he best hand off some of his burden without making his people feel he's dumping this on them? Let's assume Bill's approaching a socializer.
Hey, Lou. I'm going to need you to take on some added responsibilities. Now, as you probably know, this reorganization has given me about 12 times the workload I had before. And to tell you the truth, I can actually feel my blood pressure going up by the minute. So I need your help. I'll tell you from the start, there's no money or fancy nameplate that goes with this right now. But I think it's safe to say that you'll be helping yourself out in the eyes of others. I mean, around here, people who pitch in and go that extra mile tend to get recognized. Plus, you're so bright and fun to be around, and you have such good social skills that getting you involved in more departmental areas won't ruffle as many feathers as if I give the same assignment to some others I can think of. So this is what I'm counting on you for, Lou. Three things. Being liaison with the printers, distributing the newsletter, and monitoring the lending library. Now, a lot of the work will be phone calling with a certain amount of record keeping and making rounds. You'll probably enjoy connecting with people in the company that you've just seen in passing. And Lou, you will get a better sense of how this place works with all these new responsibilities. What I'd like to do is show you the ropes next week and then have you fully take over by the week after. And of course, as you're getting used to it all, I'll be right here if there are any questions or problems.
That was a good approach to a socializer, wasn't it? But what if Bill had the same set of needs and he had to delegate to a thinker? What would that sound like?
Larry, I'm going to need you to take on some added responsibilities. Now, this reorganization has increased my workload by about 35%, just in terms of the amount of paper crossing my desk and the phone time I'm logging. I put in more hours over the last 2 weeks than I have in any 2-week period since I've worked here, with the exception of the marathons that I pulled on the Kramer project. Tuesday night, I was here until 1 a.m. Now, I don't mind the work, but the volume is just not humanly possible. I know you're already working long hours yourself, and believe me, I wouldn't ask you to do this if I had any other alternative. But you're so organized and such a good planner, I concluded that you could figure out a way to accomplish these additional tasks with less trouble than some others in the office. And most important, I know these jobs will be done right. Now, there are three of them. One, being the printer's liaison. Second, distributing the newsletter. And third, monitoring the lending library. Now, I think these new responsibilities will tap into your verbal, literary, and organizational skills and end up being fairly easy to integrate. What I'd like to do is to give you my procedural descriptions. They are very comprehensive, and they should answer most of your questions. I would like you to look them over for a couple of days, and then on Monday, we can get together to answer any questions that remain.
Procedural descriptions will be fine for delegating to a thinker. But delegating tasks to a relator requires a very different approach.
Lisa, I'm going to need you to take on some added responsibilities. As you know, I have just been going crazy the past couple of weeks since the reorganization and all the new work they've asked me to take on. In fact, I wanted to apologize to you about how inaccessible I've been and just plain crabby. I hope you haven't taken it to heart. I mean, well, this has been a really difficult time for me, and I've realized I just simply need help. I'm asking you because I know how dedicated you are and because, well, I really trust you. You and I have been working here in various capacities for, 20-some-odd years. You know that I've come to count on you in times of crisis. And that's exactly what we have here. I need you to help me out on this. Although there's no immediate payoff in money or position, I'll try to make it up to you as time goes by. As I say, you and I have been around the track more than a few times, and you know I'm true to my word when I make a promise like that. So here's how I'd like you to help me. It just involves three different responsibilities. Now, first, you'll be the liaison to the printers, making sure that the copy gets there in time and that there are no problems. I mean, this is generally very straightforward, simple as can be, but it will take a major load off my mind. Second, you'd be distributing the newsletter. Now, this involves getting it to the couriers and the mailroom and updating the distribution lists as necessary. You'll probably be able to fit it into a monthly routine that you already have established. And third, you'll monitor the lending library, just making sure that records are kept on the resources and that people return them in time. You know, with your easygoing manner, Lisa, you'll probably have much better luck than I've had in getting people to follow the rules. It may sound like a lot, but really, I promise you it's not all that much. Here, I'll give you some materials describing the procedures that we already have set up. And then what I'd like to do is meet with you to go over it all step by step. I think we could meet maybe on Monday to talk about the printer stuff and then let that sink in. And then maybe on Wednesday for the newsletter and then on Friday for the lending library. And thank you so much. You have no idea how much this will help me.
I'm sure that approach would work well with a relator. But what about a director? She is not going to be as receptive to the heart-to-heart approach. Let's listen to how Bill adapts the same set of requests to a director.
Lorraine, I'm going to need you to take on some added responsibilities. Look, here's the situation. The reorganization has quadrupled my workload. I can't do it all. Nobody could. But it's all got to be done if our department is going to continue to be a standout in this company. Oh, it's a hell of a thing for me to ask, but you're a can-do person, somebody who always gets results and on whom I've always been able to count when the chips are down. I really need you to come through for me on this one. Now, it's three responsibilities: printer liaison, newsletter distribution, and monitoring the lending library. Now, there's no additional pay or prestige, but you'll be much more visible and have the chance to hone some new skills that could certainly lead to other things in this company or elsewhere. All right. I'll go over the requirements with you on Monday and the procedures I've been using. Once you get those down, you'll probably develop systems of your own, and they'll probably be better than mine. Now, I'm sure you'll streamline distribution, and you might even get a chance to have some input on the newsletter itself, improve some of those things that you've always complained about.
It If you're a manager who wants to be seen as a good leader, then this particular segment is loaded with useful information. If I were you, I'd listen several times to this session to get a real feel for how you can adapt your style to specific managerial situations.
Many years ago, I was preparing for, up to that point in my career, August of 87, the toughest speech I had ever given in my career. I was getting ready to speak in front of 2,000 auto dealers. That wasn't the difficult part. My subject, non-manipulative selling. I figured I'd better do a lot of homework to make the topic fit the audience. Well, anyway, I figured, let me learn something about how people react to their purchasing experiences. And I went to a lot of friends and I asked them questions. And to this day, I still remember going to this one friend of mine and asking her a very simple question. I couldn't believe her answer. Question was, how do you go about buying a new car? She said, Tony, when I go buy a car, I go through three very specific steps. She said, step number one, I determine whether or not I have a need for a new car. I said, great, how do you do that? She said, well, in the glove compartment of my car, I have a logbook. And in that logbook, I put down every mile I put on the car, every penny I spend on the car, and when the cost of ownership of that car is increasing at an increasing rate above a particular coefficient that I have on the inside front cover, it's then time to start looking for a new car. Whoa, I said, okay, then what do? She said, I go to phase two. Phase two is my research phase. In my research phase, I go to all the people and publications that rate and rank cars. And I take the top three cars that are consistently rated right at the top by all these sources. And then I take a flip chart. And at the top of the flip chart, I write down the names of the three cars. Down the side of the flip chart, I write down the 20 to 25 items that are important to me in purchasing any new car. He said, I call that my decision-making criteria. Then I rank each car against the other two on each of the 20 to 25 decision-making criteria. And then and only then, the car that scores the highest total points do I take into phase three? I said, what's that? She said, phase three is my shopping phase. In my shopping phase, I identify three dealerships that sell that particular model of car. I write out a list of questions that I will ask both the sales and service departments at each of the three dealerships. I go out, I gather the information, I take it back, I analyze it, and then and only then do I choose the dealership I'm going to buy the car from. At the end of this, I'm shaking my head in absolute disbelief. I said, I can't believe this. She said, what can't you believe? I said, I can't believe you go through all that just to buy a car. She said, well, what do? I said, I never really thought about it, but the irony is listening to you, I go through the same three steps. She said, uh-huh. I said, no, wait a second. You know, my first step, just like yours, I determine whether or not I have a need, but I do it a little bit differently. When I'm driving down the road, I see a car that catches my eye, I got a need. I quickly move into phase two. Phase two is my research phase. I usually go to one person who knows a lot about cars, and I say to that person, hey, what do you know about that new Porsche or that new Corvette convertible? The person says to me, Tony, what a machine. Hey, my research is done. That's it. I don't need anything else. I go into phase three, my shopping phase. Now, my shopping phase, I said to my friend, I go to one dealership, the dealership that's closest to me on the day the Spirit moves me to go shopping. I said, I go with my questions, but I don't write them down like you do. I got them in my head. And mine are simple. When I walk in that dealership, question number one, do you have it in stock right now? Do you have it in red? Can you add four more speakers to the four that are already in there? Because I want surround sound. I want to sit in it, see how it feels, see how it looks, see how it smells. I want to take it for a test drive, see how it handles. And one of my tests, my ultimate test in driving, like a Porsche convertible or a Mazda Miata, one of my tests, and my friend almost fainted on this one, is I have to drive it past a department store with the mirrored windows, right? Tell me you don't do that. You got to see how it looks, right? Well, I'll tell you something. My friend and I quickly realized that if either one of us sold cars and the other one of us was out to buy a car, and the one of us that sold cars practiced the golden rule. In other words, I tried to sell her a car the way I bought one, or she tried to sell me a car the way she bought one, You think we'd be successful? Absolutely not. We'd fall right on our face. She said to me, Tony, you try to sell me a car the way you buy one? Too much fluff, not enough substance. I said, you try to sell me a car the way you buy one, you'd bore me to death. Tell me more about it than I ever wanted to know. And that always happens to me. Always. I come across salespeople who are so technical, and I don't buy technical. Me, I want the big picture. I want to know how it feels.
I want to know how it feels. Doesn't that make sense to you? The fact is, we all make purchases of big-ticket items like a car in very different ways. My story about the differences between my friend and me should strike you as pretty logical now that you understand a good deal about individual behavioral styles. In this segment of the program, we're going to extend the Platinum Rule into selling, or how to sell others the way they would like to be sold. I want to show you how to relate to each of the four styles at each major step in the selling process. In truth, customers don't buy because they're made to understand the product or service. They buy when they feel understood. So the successful salesperson shows customers that they're being understood by giving them what they expect or more. But more what? That's where the Platinum Rule comes in. Now that you understand its principles, you know that the more can vary. For the director customer, it's more control. But the socializer cries out for more recognition and excitement. The relator wants more support, and the thinker, more logic. The best salespeople customize their approach and follow through. But there's more to sales than just viewing each customer through the prism of personal styles. The best salespeople also reject the traditional concept of a sale. They realize that the world has changed in significant ways and that salespeople today need new skills, new attitudes, and a new understanding of how to work with their clients. Selling systems of the past won't work today because they were designed to work in an adversarial environment. But when your customers are your partners and you want them to be lifetime partners, you can't sell using commando tactics. Instead, the collaborative salesperson helps the customer solve a problem, fill a need, or reach a goal. He doesn't see the sale as just a one-time event in which persuasiveness triumphs over resistance. Rather, he views it as a cooperative experience that paves the way for a long-term partnership. So selling effectively today means paying special attention to the interpersonal aspects of a sale in order to build a strong base of lifetime customers. Salespeople who practice the Platinum Rule, as well as the collaborative approach to sales that I'll outline here, will find the benefit cuts both ways. Their customers will regard them not just as another hawker, but as a valued, trusted resource. As a result, the salesperson's sense of professionalism and self-esteem will rise, which in turn will translate into satisfied relationships, more sales, and a greater sense of self-worth. Take the case of a guy I know who started selling Toyotas in the early 1980s. He was so laid back, so people-oriented, so lacking in the customary intensity that his peers in the showroom actually made fun of him. For one thing, they thought he was off the wall with his emphasis on getting customers whatever fact they wanted, no matter how long it took or how difficult it was to get. Secondly, he absolutely refused to pressure people. He once said, "The coconut will drop from the tree when and if it's ready." The others chuckled. But before long, unusual things started happening in that showroom. Some of his customers began coming by just to chat and say how they were enjoying their car. New prospects would ask for him by name because of referrals. He was named Best Salesperson of the Month so many times that he ran out of wall space to hold all his plaques. As his more competitive colleagues looked on in amazement, he was named Sales Manager of the dealership. Then one day, he was gone. Recruited by corporate headquarters to teach others about effective selling. Not bad for the guy the others used to poke fun at. That's the kind of success collaborative selling, combined with the Platinum Rule, can bring about. And the key is learning to adapt your selling style to fit the customer's buying style. Once you've identified a qualified prospect, there are 5 steps to any successful sale. You can learn to adapt at each step depending on which of the 4 basic personal styles you're dealing with. So here are the 5 steps. Number 1 is contact, where you show the prospect you have her best interest at heart and set the stage for the rest of the process to continue smoothly. The 2nd step is explore. This means studying your prospect's situation to uncover needs that you can fill. Step 3 is collaborate. This step involves your customer in determining the best solution. Number 4 is commit, or getting to yes. Traditionally, this has been known as closing the sale or asking for the business. But for the collaborative salesperson who practices the Platinum Rule, this stage is often just a formality. If there's been mutual agreement up to this point, the commit stage is the next logical step. And step 5, the last step, is keeping in touch after the sale or assuring customer satisfaction. This is the secret to long-term success. It's here where you make sure the customer receives everything that was promised, such as delivery, installation, and service. Now let's look at how you can build rapport at each step of the selling process. The first step, again, is the contact stage. Making contact with your prospect is the first critical test. Your application of the Platinum Rule will have an impact on the impression that you make here. In the first few minutes, you often make or break the sale. In that time, your prospect sizes you up and decides if you're the type of person that he'd like to do business with. And by using your knowledge of the Platinum Rule, you can immediately set yourself apart from the competition. So with that in mind, let's look briefly at making contact with directors. Directors, as you know, are primarily concerned with the bottom line impact of your product or service. Give them just enough information to understand overall performance. But they don't want or need a nuts and bolts description of your product's innards. Neither do they want you to be their buddy. Nor will they decide on the basis of testimonials from your legion of satisfied customers. They just want the facts. So talk about results, profits, increased efficiency, time saved, return on investment, and how your product or service will allow them to achieve their goals. In short, tell them what's in it for them. Remember, they're impatient with slower-paced people, so move at a relatively fast pace, be well-organized, and time-conscious. You might approach them by saying something like this.
Hello, Ms. Crowley. My name is Jason, and I'm from Streamliner Office Systems. I'm a sales rep, and I have a great product to tell you about. If you'll just give me 5 minutes, I'll show you how our company can help you double productivity and cut waste in half with an array of state-of-the-art office management techniques. You'll not be disappointed. When can we set up an appointment?
Now, if you're making contact with a thinker, you must do your homework. Build credibility by telling them what you think, not how you feel. Speak slowly. Thinkers dislike being rushed. Go easy on the small talk or chit-chat and avoid the hard sell. Thinkers tend to be cautious and therefore are naturally skeptical about salespeople, especially salespeople who oversell themselves. Let's listen to a salesperson from the same company approach a thinker.
Hello, Mr. Cummings. May I speak with you for a moment? My name is Josh, and I'm with Streamliner Office Systems. We're a small, privately held company devoted to helping businesses like yours to achieve optimal efficiency in every area of office operations. I have some information I would like you to look at. It shows, in a very straightforward fashion, the types of benefits that Streamliner could achieve in an office like yours. As you probably know, research shows that many businesses operate, in the aggregate, at approximately 60% of their potential optimum. That's like putting out a 20-page report with 8 blank pages. In companies roughly the size of yours, ranging from Consolidated Discs to Smith Furnishing and Design, we've achieved, in as little as 2 weeks, an increase of 20 to 30% in productivity. Given your business profile, I think we could do the same for you. Can we set up an appointment?
When you're making contact with a relator, be professional, but balance that with a non-threatening, pleasant, friendly manner. Listen patiently. Show your sincere interest in them as individuals and try to become their friend. It helps to mention the name of a person who referred you, if appropriate. That's because relators, more than any of the other styles, prefer to do business with people they know, like, and trust. Here's an example.
Hello, Ms. Carter. How are you doing today?
I'm just fine, thank you.
My name is Jennifer, and I'm with Streamliner Office Systems. Helen over at Consolidated Disk suggested that I might give you a call. She's really a charming lady, and we've enjoyed working with her. Perhaps she's mentioned the dramatic changes she's noticed around the office since she brought us in. As you probably know, she's the type who likes an office to be a pleasant place to work. Miss Carter, that's one of the key concepts behind what we do. We strive to enhance that ambiance, but at the same time help you produce the results that the folks upstairs want to see. Now, if what Ellen told me about you is true, you probably have one of the most supportive and, well, human businesses around. I'd love to get together and talk about what you do to make that so, and then to share some of the innovative techniques we've come up with for increasing productivity, reducing tension, and so on. Miss Carter, if you could spare, say, 20 minutes, I'd like to show you some of our materials, including a sample office system enhancement plan, at no obligation, of course, and find out more about what your particular needs would be. When would be a convenient time for us to get together and talk?
In your initial contact with socializers, introduce yourself with confidence and enthusiasm. Be an especially empathic listener. Show interest in them. When you talk about yourself, remember to use more feeling words and fewer thinking words. Tell stories about yourself, too, especially humorous or unusual ones. Let them set the pace and direction of the meeting, and emphasize those aspects of your product or service that will give them status, recognition, excitement, and the thrill of being the first one on the block to have the newest, best, or most prestigious item available.
Hey, Mr. Clark, it's Jill at Streamliner, the office systems people. I'm sure you've heard of us. Yeah, I know it's morning, and with the clouds out like they are, it's hard to think about anything like efficiency and productivity just now. So grab a cup of coffee and just sit back for a minute and listen. You see, Streamliner's got a lot of answers for those nagging office problems. I mean, hey, Mr. C, we're an office too, and, well, I better whisper this so no one will hear me. We have all the typical office problems. This person needs extra training over here, and those two don't get along over there, and the one on the other side talks so loud that you want to put up the Great Wall of China. Isn't that how it is? Well, you know it. So the question is, what do you do? Do you put up with all the confusion, or do you bring in someone with innovative techniques that will get Sheila the sluggard off her half-hour coffee break without noticing, that'll deal with the photocopier from hell by streamlining repair procedures, and all around get everyone so excited because you're taking out the problems, the glitches in the system, and letting people do what you're paying them to do. So then you get more done, and we can all go home on time to our loved ones and rugrats. Well, that's the large picture of what we do. The small picture is in the info packet. I'd be happy to show it to you. I could stop by, or maybe we could grab a quick lunch later this week. What works best for you?
Let's move on to the explore stage of the selling process. Each prospect has a unique need, which must be explored before you can discuss a solution. This may require repeated visits and research by you. Naturally, the bigger the ticket on the item, the longer and more involved this stage may be. What you want to look for in the prospect are problems you can help them solve or opportunities you can help them seize. The problem is the gap between what the customer needs versus what he or she now has. An opportunity, on the other hand, is something extra that can be added. For example, a new market or a better avenue of distribution or an untapped promotional vehicle. So the purpose of the explore stage is to get information, enough information to know the customer's needs and what it'll take to fulfill them. To do that, you have to listen to what the prospect says, and you also have to know how to ask questions in order to get the answers that you need. It's not necessary to ask a lot of questions, just the right ones. The questioning process must move at a pace that's comfortable for the prospect, and that, of course, depends on their particular behavioral style. Let's go back to the scene with Jennifer and Ms. Carter. Jennifer has already determined that a prospect is a relator.
Ms. Carter, about this absenteeism situation, I understand that you're very concerned about the percentages that personnel shows in the report, and I've got to say, I am too.
Yes, I'm not really sure why we're having this problem. We try to make this a place that people will really want to come to.
Well, in looking around, it seems like you have. But I think we'll be able to determine the real problem and find some ways to deal with it. There are a few things that I'll need to know, okay? These questions aren't meant to judge you or your policies, but simply to get at the heart of what is going on. In a way, to find out why we're not all, you, me, and your employees, seeing the situation in the same way. What I'd like to do is to ask you to tell me first, why do you think so many people are taking so much time off? Even if you have just ideas or suspicions without evidence, this would be a good time to bring them up.
Well, I'd hate to cast an unfavorable light on anyone that doesn't deserve it.
Oh, no, I understand. This will all stay between you and me. It just gives me a sense of how to view the problem, whom to approach, and how to talk to them, okay?
Oh, certainly. Anything I can do to help.
I appreciate that. After, we'll talk about the specific policies, and then maybe look at some of the employees who have the worst records, try to understand their situations, and see if there are any common patterns. So take your time and just pre-associate a little about why you think there might be so much absenteeism.
Jennifer knows that the key to exploring with relators is to talk warmly, informally, and ask gentle, open-ended questions that draw them out. You need to be tactful and sincere. Remember, you could have the best product or service in the world, but if the relator doesn't like you, she'll settle for second best from a salesperson she likes. What about exploring and building rapport with a director? To head off their impatience, keep your information gathering interesting by alternately asking questions and giving information. Make your questions as practical and logical as possible, and don't ask for data that's available elsewhere. Be well-organized, time-conscious, efficient, and businesslike. Ask questions that show that you've done your homework. Know the industry and the company, and be sure to allow the directors a chance to talk about their business goals. Let's listen to how Jason takes the exploring step with Ms. Crowley.
Ms. Crowley, about this absenteeism situation, I can see why you're not happy, and we're going to get on it.
I certainly hope so.
I have the report from personnel, as well as the various policies going back to the founding, and everyone's employment profile. What I need from you at this point is three things. Who do I talk to about comments or confrontations that won't be reflected in the written record? What is our timetable for concrete suggestions and implementation? And exactly how much authority do I have? How broadly are you willing to change existing policy and procedures?
Write your three things down, and when can I get back to you?
They're written right here, and I'll be in my office after 3 today or all morning tomorrow.
Great. I'll call you in the morning.
I'll be there.
How does the approach to exploring differ when you're dealing with a socializer? Socializers get bored quickly when they're not doing the talking, so much of the information gathering needs to revolve around them. You can strike a balance, though, between listening to their life stories and gleaning the necessary information. When asking business-oriented questions, keep them brief, and if you can, combine them with social questions. Let's revisit Jill and Mr. Clark.
Mr. Clark, about this absenteeism situation.
Oh, you read the personnel report.
Yes, I sure did.
A real tearjerker, huh? I'll tell you, I haven't cried like that since E.T. I mean, what are people thinking?
Well, that's the nut we're here to crack. So what do you think we're going to find inside?
Well, probably a lot of good stories. I mean, have you met our librarian here, Marcy? She should do the circuit of the talk shows. I'll tell you, every week it's something new. I mean, boyfriend with bad skin, her car's been broken into 6 times. She has a cellular phone, but she can never figure out how to use it. And then she misunderstood the holiday schedule. I mean, it was as clear as day. So I pulled Marcy aside in the lounge 3 weeks ago to sort of confront her about how the whole newsletter section on the shelves has gotten all out of order. The next thing you know, I'm hearing about grad school in Illinois, which has nothing to do with anything. Oh, you see my point?
Sounds like it's never a dull moment.
I'll tell you, Joe, my first job was nothing compared to this. I mean, lower pay, relatively speaking, for the time period, you know, early 70s, and no perks, no separate areas, no snack room, no benefits, hard work, nonstop, 8 to 5. And I never missed a day. Okay, so I was late a few times, but really, compared to this place, I mean, that was like slave labor building the pyramids. So there's got to be something that these people need. I mean, I thought the theme coffee hours and the casual Fridays would help, you know what I mean?
And what effect did they have?
Oh, they got a smile, but I think it's been about the same in terms of figures. I mean, what did it say about that in that report?
Exploring with a socializer like Mr. Clark is going to be the polar opposite from exploring with a thinker. Thinkers make good interviewees because they like to answer questions that reveal their expertise. As long as you ask logical, fact-oriented questions that probe their knowledge, thinkers will enjoy talking to you. Phrase your questions precisely and ask for precise answers. Thinkers relish detail and typically give short, crisp answers, even to open-ended questions. Encourage the thinker to ask you questions, too. If they do, and you don't have the answer, don't fake it. Promise to find the answer and get back to them, and then do it. Let's listen to how Josh handles his thinker-type client, Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Cummings, about this absenteeism situation, I've looked through the report from personnel, and then I went back to some of their raw data. I knew that breaking it down further, looking at such things as days of the week, seasons, holidays, particular reasons, illnesses, and so on, might help.
That makes sense.
There are a lot of factors involved in a situation this extreme, so we can't jump to conclusions and say, it's the schedule or it's the managerial structure. No, it's bound to be everything and nothing. We should examine all the factors. For example, as well as looking at those workers who have the worst records, who are the ones with the fewest absences?
That would be Jenner, Colby, and Garcia.
Now, is that your sense of it or the hard figures?
Both.
Anything about those three that stands out?
No. They're just good workers. Garcia has two other jobs but is never even a millisecond late. And Carol Colby has a bad leg, but she never lets it get in the way.
I'll pull their files. Now, I noticed in the report that there was a surge of absenteeism about mid-month. What could cause that?
Project deadlines? Generally set on a cycle that alternates inversely with client pay periods.
Any other mid-month factors?
No.
Do you have information on cubicle sizes and air quality?
I can get it for you.
Good. I'll want to consider those factors, too.
After you've made contact and gone through the exploring stage, the third step in the sales process is collaborating on solutions. The goal at the collaborating stage is for you and your prospect to find a solution that meets their needs. You do this by taking the prospect's ideas and combining them with your own to arrive at a solution that makes sense to both of you. Rather than using a monologue, the best salesperson engages in a dialogue to keep the prospect involved in a give and take. It's often a good idea to start by reviewing the points that were agreed upon in the last meeting to make sure that you're still both in agreement. As you collaborate on a solution, discuss how it will work in your customer's environment. Most customers care less about how something works than about what it will do for them, how it will solve their problems. So the customer smart salesperson speaks the language of benefits rather than features. A feature is some aspect of the product that exists regardless of a customer's needs, but a benefit is the way that feature satisfies a specific need. A benefit, you might say, is a feature in action. In the next segment of this program, I'll show you how to collaborate well with each behavioral style, and then we'll go on to getting a commitment and assuring customer satisfaction in our 5-step selling model.